All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 39 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. We're continuing with the story of archaic Athens, and today we're going to talk about two more important characters in that story as we approach the birth of democracy. We're going to see that one of them, Solon, was a hero. The other one, Pisistratus, well, you're going to have to decide for yourself what you think of him. We're going to we are looking at the archaic part of Athens still, and we're looking at, a time where people are experimenting with different kinds of government. And so it's important for us to be clear on the terms that we are using, because we do have some strange ones. We have some pretty standard ones, and then we have at least one really strange one. So what are the, let's see if we can just list them quickly here and make sure that the class is comfortable with these terms. What are the three forms of government that we have seen so far in Athens, in ancient Greece? Let's start with the first one, which is the kind that we find everywhere throughout thousands of years of human history. What is the most common form of government? We don't know which one's the most common? It's Monday morning. Got to get those brains activated. Egypt, the whole time, what do we have? Mesopotamia, the whole time, what do we have? What do we have the whole time in Chinese history? The whole time everywhere. Patrick? What kind of government?
A king.
A king, okay, but let's have the technical name for that. What is the technical name for that?
Slavery.
No, my dear. Okay, Rosetta, please.
Monarchy,
which means what?
What does it mean?
It's a word, and archy means to rule, and mon means how many people?
One.
Okay, monarchy, the rule of one. And then what we saw in Athens, when the other important families decided that they didn't want the ruling family, the Medontidae, to have all of the power, we got a new kind of government. What is that called? Where you have a larger group of people that are sharing power. Wyatt, Henry?
Aristocracy.
Okay, and what does that word mean literally?
Well, arrow, in Greek, means the best, and crassy means rule of.
Okay, right.
So pretty much the rule of the best.
There you go, right. And just to be clear, it's the word aristos. You haven't necessarily gotten your class notes on that theme yet. So there you go. Aristos means the best. And so aristocracy means the rule of the best. Who were the best? Who thought that they were the best? And this is pretty much always how it works when you have aristocracy. Who thought they were the best? Let's see if we have that talk covered. No, we don't quite have that covered in our week 13 class notes yet. I wanted to show you guys that the class notes are coming. But who thought they were the best? Who were the sons of noble fathers? Rosetta? Or that's what you were going to say.
Well, I think they were the sons of the noble fathers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were known in Athens as the Eupatrids. All right, so now let's see. I've gotten mostly caught up on the class notes. All of the class notes for last week will also be on the class webpage very shortly here. So now you'll be able to read this in addition to the material of your self-tests in order to in order to get, you know, some boost, a little bit of a boost here in remembering some of these things. All right, so before I get into the class notes here and discuss a few of the other key vocabulary words that we need, what is the third form of government that we saw so far? So the aristocracy went against the king of Athens and said, all right, we're going to share power now. We're going to have kings that rule for 10 years only. And then later on they said, well, only for 1 year. And we're going to split up the power of the king among 9 archons, 9 rulers. So that is a very interesting arrangement. We don't see that anywhere else. And so that's the aristocracy. But then we saw something else. What happened when those commoners at the bottom of the pile, you know, really got upset with either the king or the aristocracy? What did they do? Because they didn't have history classes to teach them about ancient Athens. They hadn't lived through that yet. All right, so what did they know to do when they wanted to get rid of the king? Or get rid of the aristocracy, either way, right? There was something that they did, which is very strange, sort of sounding government. Rosetta?
Oh.
Your hand was up from earlier, I see. All right, so, well, I'll help you guys here on your Monday morning fogginess. So it's tyranny. What? Wait a minute. That should spur your memory. They said, let's have a tyranny. What? What do you mean, Mr. Powell? Oh, yeah, now I remember. The Greeks used that word differently than we do. What did they mean by tyranny?
Tyrannos.
Patrick, raise your hand and go ahead and say it. Go ahead.
Tyrannos.
What is a tyrannos? You are correct.
Somebody who is a tyrant?
Yes, indeed. So tyrannos is the Greek word for tyrant. But why would the Greeks want one of those? What was a tyrannos for them? I'm glad you brought back that word. But it's not enough to have the word. We got to have the meaning. What was a tyrannos, Rosetta?
A tyrannos was somebody who leader of a rebellion.
Okay, a popular leader, yes. Somebody that the people chose to be king. All right, so it's strange. It's kind of like a democracy in a sense, right? Because you got the people choosing. But what they are choosing is a king. Except he doesn't have any famous, he's not necessarily the son of a noble father. He's just somebody who promises to do good things for the people. So that's a tyrannos. That was the third form of government. And we saw last time a character named Cylon who tried to become the tyrannos of Athens. Because this was happening in other Greek city-states. People would rebel and they would choose a tyrannos. So this was kind of the pattern of archaic Greece. We have the pattern of archaic Egypt, which was just, you have a pharaoh and a dynasty, and then at some point it kind of breaks apart, and you, Upper and Lower Egypt are no longer united, and then they get reunited, and there's kind of a pattern there in Egypt. And there was a pattern also in Mesopotamia, where one empire would conquer the previous one, and then there would be a period of chaos in the war, and then there would be a new empire, and so on, and there was kind of a pattern there too. In Greece, the pattern was usually some cycle between a king and an aristocracy and the rule of a tyrannos. And the Greeks would go kind of back and forth and back and forth. And that would never really solve anything. And so that's what we're going to get to today here, is that, well, this was not a solution to having a better society. They didn't yet have the ideas that are necessary to have a better society. So, we'll get to somebody today who is going to make who's going to introduce a good idea into Athenian society. But as I was preparing the class notes, I thought to myself, "Oh yeah, there's some words here that we haven't quite used yet or explained yet, which we gotta know. And so I'm gonna introduce them, and we'll probably review them more than once to make sure you know them. There is quite a mouthful here in the class notes. In the class notes, you have the Minoans, which we talked about, the earliest prehistorical Greeks, and the Mycenaeans. As I'm introducing that in the class notes, I talk about a place called the Peloponnese. So you will see that, and I just wanted to make sure that you would know what that is and not have any trouble finding it. So if we go on the map and we look at Greece, Greece is a very strange, has very strange geography, right? And you'll notice right here, this, oops, I'm sorry, I wanted to annotate it. Just one second. This right here is labeled Peloponnese. Okay? The Peloponnese is this almost island. It's not an island. Because look, you go around all the edge and it almost looks like an island. Almost. Wait, oh, look. There's this tiny, tiny, tiny narrow part connecting it to the mainland. Who knows what this is called? A piece of land that is surrounded on all sides but one that connects it to the rest of a continent. What is the name for that? Baja California would be an example. Florida would be another example. Italy would be another example. This is another one. What do we call this type of piece of land that's only slightly connected to the rest? Anybody knows that geography term? All right, I bet you do, but you just forgot it. It's called a peninsula. I'm going to type that for you guys. A peninsula. So the Peloponnese is a peninsula. Okay, there we go. Peninsula. And that is a very important part of Greek geography. Athens was not on the peninsula, on the Peloponnese Peninsula, but most of the Greek city-state, or, well, no, I won't say most, but a lot of them were, including Olympia, including Sparta. So that was a very important piece of the geography. All right, I just wanted to get that term out there so that you're comfortable with it. We're going to do more Greek geography as we get to conflicts between the Greek city-states. But before we get to that, we need to know more about each of them, in particular Athens. So let's talk about the situation in Athens as we arrive at this important character named Solon. Well, we talked about how we have monarchy, aristocracy, and sometimes you'll get a tyrannos, a guy who comes forward with his clan and his supporters. And he's got his own private army, and he says to the people, I will make the world a better place. Choose me as your new king. We're going to get rid of those other characters, the aristocracy or the kings. We're not going to get rid of them entirely, but we're going to push them out of power, and I will run the government on your behalf. And Solon tried to do that, but the people did not accept him, even though he was an Olympic champion. And a very famous person, and highly regarded, they did not accept him. And after Solon came and went, the aristocracy decided, ooh, we don't want that anymore. We don't want the problem of a character like that coming and taking over the government. So we're going to make harsher laws. We're going to make laws to really discourage anybody from trying something like that again. We have a vocabulary word for harsh, which comes from the name of the archon who made those harsh laws. His name was Draco. So what is a vocabulary word that means harsh or particularly strict? A word similar to the name Draco. Wyatt, Henry?
Draconian.
Draconian, very good. You know what I always like to joke to students in the elementary class? I like to joke that if your parents impose a punishment on you that is harsh, and you tell them that they are being draconian, then you are allowed to tell them that Mr. Powell says that you get a lighter punishment. So that's Mr. Powell interfering in parenting when he says that if you use the vocabulary word draconian, then you deserve a lighter punishment. Because that's very clever to do. Okay, so if that works for you, you let me know, okay? So, and you can use it in all kinds of cases. Like if mom says that you can't have a second serving of vanilla ice cream, well, then you can say, "Mom, you're being draconian." And then she'll have to give you more ice cream. All right, so see if you can pull that one off. This is the power of history here. So now Mr. Powell is helping you guys to get along in life. All right, so now that we have this draconian set of rules, I'm going to tell you one of the draconian features of it, one of the really sad features of the way that life was in Athens. And it had to do with the fact that commoners would sometimes get into a very difficult situation in their lives. Remember that there was no Nile in Greece. There was no great river providing the wonderful atmosphere for life in terms of the water and the soil and everything. And so when you would get a drought in Greece, it would be that much more difficult than it would be even in Egypt. Right? In Egypt, remember what happened when there was a drought? What did they do in Egypt? What did the rulers do in Egypt when there was a drought? Somebody might remember something about measurements of the Nile and stuff. Rosetta?
They measured how much water had gone down.
Yes.
And they reduced the wheat, the food that they gave for the crops.
That was a little bit hard to make out there, Rosetta. So I think you said it right. They were measuring the water. Patrick, how did they measure the water?
By using a nilometer.
Nilometer, right. And then they would do what?
Another thing.
Yeah?
That if it's too high, and then the crops were ruined by
yes.
the water, then the pharaoh would lower the taxes.
Okay, but a drought, is it too high or too low? A drought means it's really hot and dry.
Mm-hmm.
So where would the river be?
Low.
It would be low, right? So
yeah,
that's what would happen in ancient Egypt. Okay, but in ancient Greece, when you only have streams and you only have really small rivers, and there's not a lot of rain, well, evidently the situation is going to be that much more difficult. And the small farmers, the commoners, would have great difficulties in dealing with this situation. So, when they were really desperate, they would make a deal with one of the Eupatrids. And so they would go to the Eupatrids and they would say, "Well, can you please lend me some food? Can you please, you know, I'm going to starve. My family's going to starve. We don't have enough because we're a small farm and we have now a small crop this year and we're not going to be able to survive. So please lend me some food." And the Eupatrids, who had large land holdings and were very wealthy and had hundreds of slaves working their huge farms, would be able to give up some because the drought would never hit them as hard as the poorer people. So they would lend money in the form of wheat because they didn't have coins, but they would lend them some food. But lending, of course, is not giving. When you lend somebody something, what's supposed to happen? You know how this works when you lend your toy to your little sister. Sigourney, go ahead.
They pay it back.
Yeah, you're supposed to give it back later, right? So in other words, maybe the next season, when the crops are good again, you're supposed to then give back a share of your crops to this Eupatrid farmer and then pay off your debt, right? But sometimes it would get so bad that the small farmer simply could not hold up their end of the bargain. So here was the draconian, which means harsh, right? The draconian outcome. Opal, put your hand down. I'm getting confused here. So So here was the draconian outcome. If you could not pay back your debt to Eupatrid, you became a slave. So this arrangement is known as debt slavery. See? Two ideas put together, right? Debt, which is when you owe somebody money, right? The debt is being in a position of having to owe somebody. You have borrowed, and therefore you must give it back, so you have debt. And then, since you can't, the outcome is you become a slave. Okay, so this was sadly one of the ways that you could become a slave in a place like Athens. Rosetta, go ahead.
A slave for your whole life?
Depends on the amount of the debt. And yeah, so it depends. So if I remember correctly, that's a really interesting question, Rosetta, because maybe not for your entire life, but it depends on the debt. Until you had paid back, in a sense, through your labor, right, what you owed. But I'm not sure how much of the details we know in terms of debt slavery. I do know that some people, at least, were slaves for life. So basically, you lost all your rights as a citizen, and you became a slave if you had a debt that you couldn't pay back. Well, now that is draconian, isn't it? In modern times, we don't allow that. In modern civilized societies, when people have a debt they cannot repay, there are various ways that people can make an arrangement to get out of their debt. So, but in the past, in societies that are, let's say, less advanced, you would have to go to prison or you would have to become a slave. And so that was now getting to, that was a part of Athenian society. That people became debt slaves. Well, not surprisingly, the more people this happened to, the more the kinds of people who might become debt slaves would protest, right? Would get angry. They would say, "What? We don't want to live in a city-state where if you're going to starve, the only alternative is you have to become a slave." We don't want to live in a society like that. We want, it's not really fair. I mean, it's, maybe there has to be some important arrangement that you make, but it can't include slavery. So they were protesting this, and it came to the point where there was going to be a civil war over this issue. And so the Greeks, the Athenians, were quite desperate, and they said, "What are we going to do about this? We can't agree on this, so we're going to have an archon make the decision for us." Remember what I said about how when the king's power was broken up, there were 9 archons, and then sometimes when there was an emergency, an archon would become the ruler of the entire city-state. And they would say, okay, especially in a war, there would be an archon who would take over the city temporarily to fight the war. And then in some emergencies like this as well, the aristocracy would give up power and they would say to the archon, "Solve this problem. We have a desperate problem. We can't agree. Everything's going to fall apart. We need somebody to solve this." So they chose a man named Solon to do this. Solon was a member of the aristocracy. He was a war hero. He was very highly regarded in Athens, considered to be a very wise person. Actually, here is the Wikipedia page for Solon. Now, wait a minute. I'm annotating, so I can't do what I want to do. This is pretty cool. If you go to the Wikipedia page for Solon, you will see that there is a sculpture of Solon. It's called a bas-relief because it's built into the wall. And in the U.S. House of Representatives, in the American Congress, because he is considered one of the ancient heroes, one of the greatest ancient lawgivers. And so there is a sculpture of him in the American House of Representatives. So what Solon did was he had to figure out a solution to the problem of debt slavery, which was going to tear Athens apart. And he did something fascinating. He emancipated, step one of his solution was he emancipated the debt slaves. What does that mean? This is a great vocabulary word. Emancipated. Patrick?
The freeing of slaves.
The freeing of slaves. Emancipation. You might have guessed that from the self-test suggested questions. Emancipation is the freeing of slaves. So he emancipated the debt slaves. All right? And then he did something more dramatic than that to avoid a crisis later in history. What do we call it when you end slavery? You make it illegal. This happened in America also. Yes?
Ending of slavery.
Well, yeah, what do you call it? What's the vocabulary word for ending slavery? Some of you might remember in American history, right? Leading up to the Civil War, there were people who said, we should end slavery. What were they called? The word here, the great word, is abolition. Okay? So we have two things that Solon did. He emancipated the debt slaves, and he abolished debt slavery in Athens. So in other words, you could never have any more debt slaves because it was illegal to make that arrangement. From now on, nobody could make an arrangement that would result in a citizen of Athens becoming a slave. Now, the commoners wanted more. I mean, this was really an amazing thing that he did, if you think about it. Solon is definitely one of the heroes of the archaic world for being an emancipator and an abolitionist. Wow, that is amazing stuff. Because we only talk about such things when we're talking about the 19th century in America, in England. These are the modern heroes who end slavery. But here we have somebody in archaic times who's doing that for his own citizens. Now, he's not doing it for all of humanity. He's not doing it for people who are not Athenians. So if you were conquered in a war against Athens and you were a slave, too bad for you. I mean, in archaic times, that was completely normal. That was normal throughout almost all of human history. So that wasn't anything special to Solon. But he didn't want Athenians ever becoming slaves in Athens. So he said, all right, I'm going to emancipate the debt slaves and I'm going to abolish debt slavery. But the commoners wanted more. They wanted more land. They wanted Solon as the archon to say, I'm going to take some of the land away from the Eupatrids and give it to the commoners. So we would call that redistribution. But Solon refused to do that. He understood that if he did that, what would happen? Patrick?
War.
Probably a good answer. But why? Rosetta?
Because then the Eupatrids would get angry at the commoners.
Yeah, he understood that he was in a delicate situation where you got two sides that want something. The Eupatrids don't want to give up all of their advantages, but the commoners are really desperate for improvement. So what do you have to do? What is it called when you make a solution that gives both sides part of what they want? Or that you find where you find a middle ground, and not everybody is completely happy, but at least everybody gets something that they want. Opal?
A compromise. compromise.
A compromise, right? Exactly. So Solon made a compromise. He said, well, I'm going to emancipate the debt slaves, and I'm going to abolish debt slavery, but I'm not going to redistribute land, because I know that that is going too far, and that the Eupatrids will then rebel against the arrangement and will have the civil war that we're trying to avoid. So Solon was quite wise in that regard, trying to make a compromise. He was still quite worried that the Athenians would not accept his deal. But so the part of the arrangement was that he would make the laws, and the Athenians promised that they would follow his laws for 10 years, which apparently they did. But Solon didn't trust them to do that. So he made the laws, and then he left. He left Athens because he didn't want to see what was going to happen, because he was quite worried that the Athenians would not be able to keep up the bargain. In the end, they were not able to keep up the bargain. So he was kind of right that things were very fragile. And in the end, they were not able to keep up the bargain because the commoners wanted redistribution. Who would they thus turn to get it? Who do the commoners turn to when there's a problem they have with the aristocracy, Patrick?
Well, a tyrannos?
A tyrannos, exactly. So following the laws of Solon that stood for 10 years, the commoners got impatient with this arrangement. They wanted more land. Now, we're almost done here. So let me just for a couple minutes explain why this led them to have a tyrannos and why the compromise led them in this direction. Because think of this. You are a commoner. You don't have enough food. Now, before the abolition of debt slavery, you could make a deal with a Eupatrid that would say, get me food, that would get you food so you wouldn't starve. But now that abolition has happened, what's the problem? Now that abolition has happened, notice that can you make that deal anymore? If you go to the Eupatrid and you say, please give me food, what's the Eupatrid going to say? Rosanna?
No.
Well, yeah, he's going to say, what have you got to offer me in exchange? What are you going to do for me if you can't pay me back? Where will that leave me? Now, in the past, the commoner could sign and he could say, I will become your debt slave. But now that abolition had happened, could he make that deal? No, he could not even make the deal. So, since debt slavery had been abolished, what could the commoners do? You would say, on the one hand, well, their life had been made better because they weren't debt slaves anymore. But on the other hand, if they couldn't make a bargain, well, which would you rather be? A debt slave or dead? Which one, Patrick?
Even though you wouldn't like being a debt slave, it would be better than being dead.
Yeah, that's probably. I mean, depends how slaves were treated, but at least you'd be alive, right? Yeah, so this was the problem, was now you couldn't make the deal. So, of course, the commoners wanted the land, because now they couldn't make the deal. They needed more land, more desperately than ever, because they couldn't get food from the Eupatrids. They couldn't make bargains with them involving debt slavery, so they desperately needed the land. So Solon's compromise kind of forced them into that situation. And so, yep, we get this commoner who comes forward. His name was Pisistratus. And he promised redistribution. So let's put that word on there. Pisistratus became the first tyrannos of Athens because he solved, well, he promised, he solved this commoner's headache of not having enough land by basically saying, all right, let's arm ourselves, let's take over, and let's redistribute the land. So Pisistratus became, and he, of course the commoners wanted that desperately, so they agreed to it. And they made him the Tyrannos of Athens. Of course, it required some violent struggle, probably a civil war of some duration. We don't know all the details, but they made him the Tyrannos. So we so now the commoners have got more power, but of course the Eupatrids are not going to be happy. So you can imagine this going back and forth, like I said, a pattern. Where sometimes the commoners have more power, sometimes the Eupatrids have more power, and so on. And it's just going back and forth. And it's constantly people kind of getting revenge on each other or getting an advantage over each other and fighting each other. There's no progress there, sadly. Even though Solon meant well, and we would kind of admire anything that has to do with freeing of slaves, that didn't solve the problems of life in ancient Athens. So, what was going to happen, this arrangement was not going to last very long, much longer. So we're going to see that the tyranny of Pisistratus, and then later of his sons, led, of course, to a rebellion of the aristocracy. And now what? Well, thank goodness, somebody's going to come along, the greatest hero of Athenian history, and he's going to invent a new solution. So yes, we are going to get to democracy. All right, folks, that's it for today. Thank you very much. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.